Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Host, good evening, everyone. I'm your host, Dr. Nancy V. Brown Willis, and I'm on scan number 3027 with my co-host, Miss Annie. We are so happy to be here with you all tonight. Thank you for joining us on NASCA Stop Child Abuse Now radio show. Again, the phone number to call is 646-595-2118. If you would like to join us this evening, please feel free to call this number. Again, the phone number is 2118. And we are on scan number 3027. Hello, Annie. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing just great, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How was your birthday?
Pardon?
How was your birthday celebration? I know you were out of town enjoying your birthday.
Yes, it was wonderful. I just spent a lot of time wool gathering and considering my life and being happy with it. So it was a good evaluation. I'm going to go ahead and read the NASCA mission statement, if that's okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, NASCA stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And NASCA is a nonprofit 501c3. And here's the mission statement. We have a single purpose at NASCA, to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, CSA. Presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. And two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And tonight is a call-in discussion with a survivor professional. And tonight's special survivor professional is Felicia Johnson from Miami, Florida, who has an incredible story of transformation. She was physically and sexually abused, taken from her family and placed in the foster care system where she would stay for 10 years. She emancipated out at age 16, facing multiple hardships. Felicia refused to allow her past to dictate her future. So she pushed through the pain to embark on her healing journey and began to see triumph in her trauma. "I am a survivor," she says. "At 7 years old, I was sexually molested by an uncle, physically abused by my stepfather, and labeled as a troubled child by my mother." Felicia became quite the advocate and activist. "I created Heal Your Story Foundation to help trauma survivors and to encourage at-risk youth to transition from their hurtful experiences to living and building a better life." And with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Dr. Nancy.
Thank you. Such a wonderful job reading that mission statement. NASCA does so much for the community and so much for survivors of abuse. So I hope that anyone who's listening will definitely check out the website. That's NASCA.org. And if you can call in the guest number, if you'd like to join us tonight, again, the number is 646-595-2118. Again, that number is 646-595-2118. It looks like Miss Felicia is not on right now. And
you know what happened? Dr. Nancy, I think I accidentally disconnected her. Here she is.
Okay, so that's actually one of our friends, Miss Sharon. She's on.
Oh.
She's on, but our special guest, she's still not on, and that sometimes happens. Where people are running late or might not have put it in their calendar. Things happen. Things happen. So we're hoping that she still calls in today. I send her a message. I don't know if she received the message yet, but still, just in case, we will just tune in and still start the show and hope that she does come on. You know, what I really was looking forward to meeting Miss Felicia, a couple of things about her story, but one of the things that really stood out to me was that she was in the foster care system, okay? She was in the foster care system for 10 years. I went through the foster care system, and I recently did a program where I became a foster care peer support specialist. And, you know, speaking to other foster care and abuse survivors, it's just a lot of things just really started to come to the forefront, looking at some of the statistics of some of the children that have been through the foster care system and how they're not expected to make a full recovery. But when it comes to peer support, we really focus on the recovery portion of it and walking hand in hand with the children that have been through them. So I do hope that she does join us tonight. And if she doesn't join us tonight, I hope to get her back on because I actually was looking forward to speaking to her in regards to her story. Have you ever been through the foster care system, Annie?
I have not. I don't have any experience with the foster care system.
Okay. Do you know people that have been through the foster care system or any children?
I know I've talked to a lot of people who did experience that, but I didn't personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so a lot of times, you know, kids who've been through the foster care system, they have a lot of trust issues. One of the things that we're talking about is the fact that, you know, you may go from home to home or if you have a bad experience with your parents and then you have a bad experience with your parents or caretaker, how that plays in your life, how that starts to, you know, play out in your life. And a lot of times some of these children end up in the juvenile justice system and, you know, it's just a lot that comes with it. So, again, it's really important just to get educated. I know, I don't know if Mr. Ron feels like talking at all tonight, But I know that she works with the youth, and sometimes a lot of these kids have been through the foster care system, and they share that through the foster care system. Some haven't, but some have. And when you listen to their stories, a lot of times, you know, you can relate to a lot of what they've been through in regards to that foster care system. Ms. Saran, how are you?
Nancy, I'm doing well. I was texting my sister. She's a foster care parent, and I know she has encountered some issues, good and bad, with fostering kids. So I was trying to text her and see if she wanted to talk about the foster care.
Well, that would be great. Yeah. So if she does, if you get her, definitely ask her to call in the number. I would love to hear from her. And when it comes to, again, and I was saying earlier, as far as trust, you know, a lot of kids that have been through the foster care system, and it's not just kids that have been through the foster care system, a lot of kids who've experienced trauma, and we have a hard time with interpersonal relationships. And that can be relationships with family members, that can be relationships with friends, that can be romantic relationships, and just even acquaintance. You know, a lot of times it's just a struggle because of the severe level of trust. I'm going to read a little part here. It says, when we become victims of abuse and neglect at the hands of a family member, such as a mother or father, our perception of relationships is distorted and heavily impacted. We tend to seek out what we should be getting from our caretakers, from people that don't fall in the category of having our best at heart. We also become engulfed with the fear of attachment or being vulnerable to another person, that we miss out on the benefits of romance and friendships because these type of relationships are only healthy if they are reciprocal. We engage in self-sabotaging relationships to the point where we are left alone, depressed, isolated because we are emotionally unavailable and on constant high alert of possibilities of betrayal. And like I said, this is not only for children that have been through the foster care system. This is from people who have experienced, whether it's youth or adults, people who have experienced abuse. You know, you have a hard time with family and relatives or adoptive parents or cousins, family members. You know, it's hard to feel safe, right? Family, you're supposed to be home. But when you are really lacking in that area of trust, it's very, 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 very difficult. But the romantic relationships, like it's mentioned here, sometimes engage in self-sabotaging behavior. So we might sabotage the relationship because we want to hurt them before they hurt us. So we want to just get away and not be hurt. And so sometimes we enter in these self-sabotaging behaviors that cause us to miss out in a good relationship when it comes into the area of romance, right? Again, because we don't feel safe. You know, it's hard to build that bond and to allow people in. And in the area of romantic relationships, sometimes us who have been through abuse, we have a hard time with monogamous relationships. A lot of times when I speak to men, they'll talk about their childhood, and then I'm like, oh, okay, you know, I start to put two and two together. Or a lot of times when I talk to females who have been through abuse, and then they talk about some of the relationships that they enter in and some of the things that they do, I'm like, okay, I understand, you know, some of these things are part of the after effect of abuse. And lastly, like I said, you know, sometimes even friendships, really being able to choose healthy friendships, people who have your best interest at heart, people who want to see you win, people who care about you for real. Sometimes it's hard because your perception of good people becomes distorted by the people who have abused you in the past, and then you continuously keep entering into abusive relationships with people who don't have your best interest at heart, they might. And I'm talking to the youth sometimes. I'm like, you know, if that person keeps making fun of you, if that person keeps hurting you, if that person's purposely saying things to offend you, maybe that's not your friend, you know. Pay attention to those signs. So what's your thought about that, Miss Annie?
I think that you're right on the right track with that. I don't really have a big input yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I said, this is not only from foster care. This is also from, you know, from being abused, having been through abuse, you know. You're dealing with anxiety, insecurity, so you're insecure in relationships. You know, again, you're constantly worrying that you're going to get rejected. You're constantly worrying you're going to be abandoned. You know, sometimes you become hypervigilant. And sometimes we talk about the different styles, identifying the different types of attachment styles, you know. So sometimes, you know, you become avoidant. And that's what I was saying earlier. Sometimes you avoid a good relationship because of the fear of being hurt. And, you know, that's just, you build the walls. It's sad, but it's true. It's just something that comes along with it. Ms. Sharon, do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I know from working in the juvenile system, childhood abuse and neglect plays a lot to their criminal activity. Because a lot of times they connect with the wrong people just trying to find acceptance or that family that they don't have at home. And those people that are out there in the streets are the people that accept them, because most of the kids that come in, they're still children under the age of 16. But they've done horrendous crimes only because they're trying to find their place where they fit out in public.
Right. Wow, that's true. And yeah, go ahead.
Not only that, we do get a lot of sexual offenders, even the juveniles, within the juveniles. And then we found out that most of the, about 99% of the sexual offenders have been sexually offended.
That is so true. A lot of times, and I know Miss Annie knows this, a lot of times when we speak to people who have been abused and they're sharing their story, we'll find out that the person that abused them was abused, you know? And it's just this cycle, it was really sad, but, I mean, there are a lot of side effects to abuse. I wanted to talk a little bit about, there's something called RAD, and that really stands for Reactive Attachment Disorder. I'm going to read this one little part right here. Reactive Attachment Disorder, RAD, is a disruptive disorder believed to be caused by chronic and severe neglect in early childhood. RAD was first added to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders in the 1980s. Reactive Attachment Disorder, RAD, is a condition in which an infant or young child does not form a secure, healthy emotional bond with his or her primary caretakers, that's the parent figures. This is a common diagnosis among anyone who has experienced childhood abuse or neglect, childhood abuse and neglect. This behavior typically goes undiagnosed, but is understood to be a characteristic of most current and former foster youth. So, you know, some of the symptoms of RAD are detachment. Okay, detachment, excessive, holding back emotions, excessively holding back emotions, withdrawal, or a mixture of approach and avoidance, like we're just saying, you know, avoiding good relationships and good people and, you know, being able to heal, moving forward, failure to seek affection from caregivers and other people, a tendency to keep to themselves, unresponsiveness or resistance to comforting. So one of the things, I mean, some of this stuff here I can actually relate with, and I'm sure many people can who have been through abuse, neglect, anything like that at some point in their lives. Also, when it comes to RAD, a lot of people that have been through childhood abuse, they deal with depression, they deal with anxiety disorder, they may deal with, okay, not always, but these are some of the things that you may see. They may deal with substance use disorder, intense low self-esteem, suicide idealization, eating disorder, incarceration, just like we were just speaking with Ms. Sharon about some of the incarcerated youth. Some of them have been through this stuff. They've been through childhood abuse, neglect, okay? Aggressiveness, anger, inability to control emotions, intense mood swings due to mental attachment regulation. So a lot of times you'll notice that some of the kids or adults, once they get the help and support that they need, and once they get seen by a doctor, sometimes they have to be placed on medication to help them balance their emotions, because some of these kids, they're angry all the time. You'll notice they're always upset, they're always angry. Why are you so angry? And it's because they have a lot of unresolved trauma. Some of them become very destructive, okay? Some of them are very charming, okay? They learn how to maneuver the system, okay? You may notice there's poor eye contact. That's one of the things you may notice when you're dealing with the youth. And this is like when we're doing peer support. Well, you know, we're talking to the youth, we're connecting with them, and we may notice they have low impulse control. They're always stealing, they're always lying. They're very demanding, clingy behavior. And that's why a lot of times in the facilities, we try to also ask them, you know, not to do the hugging. It's for other reasons as well. But it's always, you know, safety reasons as well. But some of them, they do these things. It's just something that they do. Inability to participate in healthy relationships, like we were just saying earlier. They may enter into these relationships where they're always arguing and not really understanding what a healthy relationship is. They probably haven't seen a healthy relationship. Okay. Low impulse control, no apparent remorse or conscience. You know, sometimes some of these kids, they do stuff, honey, they don't even feel bad about it. They have no remorse. It'll be like, you stab somebody? Yeah. And you're like, what? It's like they just have no remorse. Okay. They don't feel bad about it. Yes.
Sometimes I think that, especially working in the facility, that's a survival technique for them to seem bigger bigger than that crime, not to have any remorse because they don't want to appear to be weak. But as you said, they have problems sleeping. So we have a question today about medicating the youth. Yep. And it's not because we're trying to keep them medicated. It's just because of trauma. A lot of youth have experienced lots of trauma. And they're... the person who the crime was against comes and hunts those kids. And not only that, you have a lot of abuse from parents, mothers, boyfriends, mothers who neglect their kids. And the kids are normally in the society trying to survive. When they get inside the facility, that's a moment for them to actually be a kid again, to let their guard down, and then you see all the anxiety. They talk about all the abuse that has happened to them. And then, again, they are the ones that are abusers now.
That was good you said that. It's on the list right here, actually. I'm glad that you did say that, because issues with food and or sleep is a side effect of RAD. Okay. Reactive attachment disorder. So you're right. I mean, definitely. You know, medication, like I said, when they have the right support, they have the right doctor, they're following up, and they're being, you know, they're consistent with their medication or their treatment plan with their doctor. All of this is part of, you know, helping them to heal and to get back so they can function in society, because that's really the ultimate goal. as we want these kids to be able to function in society. Issues with food and issues with sleeping. I mean, I used to always have night terrors. I used to have a really hard time with sleep, and so I did have to go to a doctor and seek treatment because I would wake up with these repetitive nightmares. I mean, some people just have a hard time sleeping. They're up all night, you know, and they have insomnia, and they struggle still from their trauma. But me, I was dealing with, like, night terrors and stuff like that. So I had to go get help for it. But some people, they don't know that they need to go get help for it. They think, you know, they just don't know. They have to have somebody working with them, a case manager, just someone working with them to kind of guide them in that direction, because you don't really know something's wrong with you. It's not something that you really notice. It's something that the people around you who love you and care about you normally notice first and then recommend you to that support that you need. But that's not one of the things, one of the symptoms also from RAD. And again, RAD stands for Reactive Attachment Disorder, is affectionate and inappropriate with strangers. And like I said, you know, earlier, sometimes you'll see people that have a hard time being in monogamous relationships. They're, you know, just kind of like hanging on different people, sitting on men's laps, or just, you know, just entering into these relationships that are just sexual. Sometimes those are some of the side effects from being abused. You know, you don't really understand the respectful boundaries for yourself and for others. So does not appear to learn from mistakes. A lot of times these children who have been through this type of trauma, like I said, that you'll be like, why would you do that? And they're like, man, I did it because if he said something else, da, 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 da. And they don't really, some people don't see that there's a problem. I mean, and just like you said, Ms. Sharon, some people, they know it's a problem and they're doing it just to act tough, to survive. 100% correct. And then there are also children who, they really don't realize that what they're doing is wrong. They really just keep making the same mistake, okay? And then can never or rarely be confronted when frightened or hurt. So some of them, they cannot be confronted when they're frightened or when they're hurt. You can't say nothing to them. You can't, you know, and that also is a protective mechanism, okay? Does anybody have any comments? Let me go back in here. Let me see if our guest has shown up yet. I don't see her on yet. Miss Annie, do you have any comments?
Well, I didn't know that I had RAD, but I do apparently. Reactive Attachment Disorder. This is the first time I've heard of this. But yes, in your reading of the symptoms, I can pretty much check them off. You know, I've got all of those symptoms.
Right.
So now that I am diagnosed as a RAD person, what do they do about it? Is there specific treatment for RAD?
Well, again, you know, most of the times what we want to do is try to make sure that we recommend someone to see a professional and get support, because it's, you know, we have a hard time accepting that a lot of us have a hard time accepting any type of diagnosis or anything. Everybody, a lot of times you realize you're blaming other people, you're defensive, you know, you're not aware of your actions or, you know, whatever have you. And so the main thing would be to get the support from professionals. Now, when it comes to peer support, we normally listen and we meet people where we are. You know, we just let them talk, and then we as peer support professionals, we're able to actually keep it real, okay? We can just talk about what we've been through, and there's not, like, you know, with psychologists and counselors, you have to be careful what you say, how much you say. You can't talk about, you know, what has worked for you, da-da-da, certain things. But with peer support specialists, we have a lot more leniency with that, because we're really just there to help them think about their actions and to feel comfortable enough to trust us to tell us what's going on, where they are, so we can get them the right help. We can direct them to the right people, to the right professional that could help them. And then if they do get a counselor and the counselor's not working for them, and we're doing a check-in with them or we're checking in on them, and they say to us, you know what, every time I meet with Dr. I'm getting more upset, or this is happening, we're able to say, hey, you have the right to get a new counselor. The purpose of getting a counselor is to help you heal. It's not to upset you and keep you angry, and then it takes away from your healing and recovery. But that's one of the things that right now I can say, staying in my role is really being supportive and listening and then guiding someone to get the right help that they need, the right support that they need, and then checking in to see how that support's going. And also just making sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do, like, hey, all right, so, you know, what's your goal for this week? What are your goals? Because sometimes when you go through childhood trauma, you get stuck a lot. You get, like, stuck in cycles. That's just one of the things from being abused. You find yourself getting stuck in a cycle. And so sometimes you need somebody to check in with you and be like, hey, you know, only because my goals are to finish school and become a licensed counselor and all this stuff here, it doesn't mean that their goal is to become all that. Their goal might just be to brush their hair every day, make their bed, comb their hair, take showers, and maybe start looking for a job. You know, or maybe start looking for an apartment, and just encourage them to be the best version of themselves and to reach the goals that they have, you know, and not force them to meet the goals that we would like them to meet, but kind of help guide them to their goals, to meeting, just basically meeting them where they are. But as far as you go, I mean, Miss Annie, have you addressed any of those feelings, emotions from the past? I know you're constantly working on yourself to be a better you, but what do you do right now today to work on yourself and your recovery process?
You said Annie, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, golly, I do a lot of things. Meditate. I'm not very good at it, but I try. I meditate, and I do yoga to relax, because I find that I'm always super tense, like I'm all tensed up for somebody to jump on me for no reason. I have no reason to be tense, but I am. Mm-hmm. And so I work on relaxing that. And I try to do a little crochet every day, because that's something kind of thoughtless. The way I do it is thoughtless, very easy. And I enjoy just letting go. I don't have to think about anything. I can just sit there and go 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, and it's very peaceful. Mm-hmm. And they say it's good for your brain. Crochet and handiworks are good for your brain. So they help in depression. And let's see, what else do I do to help myself? I do a lot to help myself. Every day I get all dressed and put on makeup and jewelry, so that if I see anyone, I feel like, hey, I feel like a million bucks. I am looking my best. And if I don't see anyone, no biggie, because I am my best, and I want to look like my best all the time. And so that's something kind of new in the last couple years. I used to be a real slob, you know, real slob around the house in the torn T-shirt and the sweatpants. I don't do that anymore. I dress nicely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really good. I'm glad you said that, because that's like, for example, when we're dealing with the kids, we'll say, hey, you know, some of them, they're like, you know, I have a hard time remembering to brush my teeth. I have a hard time remembering to take a shower. I have a hard time remembering to brush my hair. And so if we do a check-in and they're like, no, I've been doing doing my, I've been getting dressed. I've been doing my makeup, and I've been putting on jewelry. That's a big deal. That's a big accomplishment because, especially, like you said, you didn't used to do that before. That was not a priority to you, and now it is. But it's just that you're taking time to meditate. Sometimes when I take time to meditate, I start talking, thinking about this stuff. My ADD start kicking in. So sometimes I have a hard time in my meditation time. So, but it is important to take time to silence the brain and to just be and to let go of everything. Okay. Mm-hmm. Everything. Mm-hmm. 10. And, you know, a lot of times when you've been through life, okay, whether you're an abuse survivor or been through divorce or been through, you know, you have small children. Somebody sent me a video today, and the lady was crying. You know, she was like, I was on my way to church. Somebody sent me a TikTok. She was like, I was on my way to church, and he did. And then she shows, you know, the floor was wet. Everything was in the tub, in the bathtub. Like everything he put his hands on, he threw it in the bathtub, in the water. And, you know, his diaper was on the side of the toilet. The whole floor was wet. And then some people were laughing, but I'm like, no, people are under stress, you know. And, you know, you hear the news and you see people, they're snapping because they're under a lot of stress. So meditation, like putting the kids to sleep or putting a good show, giving them some popcorn, letting them stay in the room and taking some you time to breathe is really important because our brains are, my chest sometimes gets tight when I have a lot of pressure, a lot of stress. And it's just so important to release and to let go. So thank you for sharing that, Ms. Annie, because people need to know that. So how did you get into yoga?
How did I get into yoga? I met this woman from India, and she was a yoga teacher. And the way she taught yoga was so different from other types that I've been to since then. She taught it with a very spiritual outlook, not just about the exercise and the muscles. So I'm glad I had that as my foundation.
Yes.
And now I have a yoga teacher on television, on videos, you know. She does a new video every week. And she weighs like 400 pounds. And she is a beautiful, large woman. And she can do yoga. And she can do she stand on her head and do all these things.
Ooh.
So she totally motivates me.
If she can do it, I can learn this.
What's her name?
Yeah. The show is called The Underbelly. I forget her name. The Underbelly is the name of the show.
Is it an African-American lady? I think I've seen her before.
Is she a black lady?
Yeah, I don't remember. Yes, but I don't remember her name.
I think I've seen her. Is she really, really popular?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I love her.
Yeah, we do yoga at the facility for our... Uh-oh.
Nope. I don't know what happened. Ms. Sharon, I think she dropped the phone. Okay, so Underbelly, I'm going to look her up because, like you said, a lot of times when you see other people doing it, and you said she's a big lady, and I think I've seen her on a magazine, and it was like a big deal. She was like blowing up because she's a big, heavyset lady, and she is doing yoga, and she is passionate about it, and she is good at it, actually. And so that's to help. It definitely should help motivate people to know that anybody, if she can do it, anybody can do it. No excuses.
Anybody can, yep.
Good. So how long have you been doing yoga?
Oh, 20 years maybe? But I don't do it like every day or anything. I'm not like a great yoga person or anything. I do it kind of in spurts where I'll do it every day for a couple of months, and then I'll do it once a week, you know. I'm not regular with it.
Mm-hmm. We use the yoga.
I don't like to go to the classes because I feel inept, you know. I feel like, well, I can't really do it the way they're doing it. So.
You should still go. That's fine.
Yeah, I know. It's okay. It's just a little bit hard, you know.
Oh, it's okay. Mr. Rao,
I can't stand
say?
On my head.
Oh,
you
I
can't?
Was-
go ahead.
At the facility for our trauma youth.
Oh,
they,
wow.
They take yoga every week for by a yoga instructor that comes in.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's really good. I remember one time I signed up for a yoga class at the gym, and I was under a lot of stress at that time with my children. And I said, let me just try this. Let me tell you guys, no lie. Excuse me. I went in and I did the class like two different times. And it like filled like some type of powerful energy inside of my body and inside of my mind. I don't know how or how it happened. But I had a situation with my daughter that if I hadn't done that yoga, I don't know what would have happened. But because I did that yoga, I walked in there and I was calm and cool and kept my cool with a really, really, really bad situation. And I remember saying, wow, I think it's because I did that yoga, because it was like not like me to be that cool with that type of pressure. And I kept my cool. So whoever's listening today, if anybody listens to this recording, please take some time to meditate and consider doing yoga. Ms. Sharon, have you ever done yoga?
No, I sat in the class a couple of times. I think I was only there for the stretches, but haven't done it before.
Yep. And what about, who taught you to crochet, Ms. Annie?
I'm sorry?
Who taught you to crochet? How did you get into crocheting?
Oh, you know, I cannot remember who taught me. I've been trying to remember, but I know in the fourth grade, I started a club. We called ourselves the Knit Knots. And it was for people who crocheted and knitted, and we just got together and did that. But I think it was probably my grandmother, but I don't remember being taught. Blocked it out.
Wow, that's
but
great.
I
like that name, Knit Knots.
The Knit Knots, yeah.
You find that very what? Relaxing?
Very relaxing, yeah. When my mind is racing, you know, it can turn off racing thoughts.
Yeah. I used to like knitting. You said crochet. Is knitting the same thing as crocheting?
They're a little bit different, but they do basically the same thing. You make sweaters and blankets and stuff.
Right. Which one's the one with two needles? That's the crocheting?
Which one?
The one that has the two needles.
That's knitting. Two needles is
that's
knitting.
The knitting?
Yeah, crocheting is one needle.
What you know about that, Ms. Ron? You knit.
I used to a long time ago. Many moons ago.
Yeah. I made, when I had my daughter, I made a blanket. I crocheted it. And it was very soothing. I only know that one pattern. That's it. So, you know, that's the pattern I stuck to at that time. But I think it's important to practice. Whatever you do, it's important to practice. Another thing that I enjoyed, and I haven't done in a long time, I went to a couple of my friends had a sip and paint, and I actually really enjoyed it. I'm actually sitting in front of the paintings right now, and I actually enjoyed it. I think I need to do that again. Have you guys ever done that, the sip and paint or the painting class? Or?
I have. As a matter of fact, Kim had one for her birthday of sipping paint.
Oh, good. Yeah. A lot of times when you do things that you haven't done in a while or things that are artistic, you start tapping into new areas. Like I enjoy photography. I took photography when I was in college, and I like learned how to develop the film and do all that in the dark room, and I really, really, really love photography. I still love photography. I don't promote photography, but I can do it. And learning about the lights, how the light should, you know, where the light should sit, and the, and I actually enjoy that. But I always tell people, I'm like, you know, take some time. Some people tell me, they're like, oh, I always wanted to play the piano, but I'm so old. I'm like, hey, you're never too old to learn. Try something new. And it's important to tap into that area. And that's just part of healing. And that's how we got into this conversation. The way to start to focus on your healing journey from RAD or from mental health, mental illness disorders or mental illness, whatever have you, depression, anxiety, always finding an expert, a professional in the field of mental health if you really, really, really need support and you need a counselor. But I think in the early stages, you know, take some time for yourself. Take some time to love on yourself. Take some time to explore yourself. You know, get to know yourself again. You know, when we take time to meet new people, date new people, make new friends, we have to invest all this energy in getting to know them and getting to know who they are. But we also need to take some time to get to know who we are, what we like, you know, what do we enjoy. And I remember I went through a stage where I started dating myself. I take myself out to eat. I take myself out to, if I want to watch a movie or a show, and just, I would spend time with myself. I'll park somewhere by the water. I'll write a poem. I'll just sit right by the water and just, you know, talk to God, talk to nature, just look around and be like, wow, I'm here today. And just be in the moment. And just really appreciate the moment that we're in. So yesterday was, what was it, National Mental Health Awareness Day, y'all? Did anybody do anything or speak about mental health? Did you have anything for that, Ms. Sharon, at the facility?
Actually, we were off because it was Indigenous People Day as well.
Yes, it was. It was. Okay, they didn't do anything. Didn't do anything much, really. But today we did a little mental health symposium, and we're just trying to encourage people to talk, you know. One of the things that we notice is that a lot of times when people are ready to share their story or to talk about what they've been through, when they start talking about it, they get cut off. And sometimes they get cut off and they get rebuked because, you know, some people will start talking about what the scripture says right away, or they'll start talking about, they'll just rebuke them, kind of like cut them off. And one of the things that I've learned through the different trainings that I've taken for, you know, dealing with my own mental health, okay, or my own mental health concerns, issues, whatever we want to call them, it was the importance of being heard. It's so important that when you're going through a crisis that people listen to you and that you're being heard. And so I just want to put that out there again, as I did yesterday with my sister. But, you know, when people are going through their recovery process, it's important that we don't start to make them feel guilty for sharing their feelings. I think part of the recovery journey is to be able to share your truth. Share your truth, then we start to break it apart and reconstruct and start to speak what the word says, or start to teach them about them. Well, you know, affirmations, because not everybody's in the same spiritual walk. There's some people, they don't have religions. There's some people, they do. And we have to meet people where they are. And the first part of it is really focusing on their mental health and letting them know the first part, really, is letting them know they're not alone. Okay, letting them know they're not alone and we're here to meet them where they are and walk with them in their healing journey. And so I just wanted to say that. I wanted to share some myths about suicide. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is because I did talk about suicide yesterday. Let me see. Nobody's on. Nobody came on. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, we talked about the fact that I struggled with that spirit of suicide in the past. And I lost my sister to suicide. And Dr. Clark shared yesterday she lost her husband to suicide. Kind of we're talking about suicide. And I wanted to share just a few myths about suicide. Okay. A lot of times we think that people who talk about suicide, and this is a myth, that they're not serious. A lot of times you hear, if somebody's talking about it, you're like, girl, you're just bugging. Girl, you're just tripping. Boy, you're just playing. So, you know, it's important that at this point where we are today, that if we hear someone talking about suicide, that we take it seriously and try to get them the right help or direct them to the right help so that we know that we did our part. You're not in control. It's not on somebody takes their life, because a lot of times when somebody takes their life, people carry that burden through life, and it's not on you. But, you know, there are things you can do to kind of help guide them in the right direction, okay? Another thing is if they're talking about if we start talking about suicide, it can plant a seed about suicide in someone's mind. And that's not true, you know. It's important to ask somebody, have you ever thought about taking your life? You know, finding a way to ask the question, are you thinking about taking your life? Have you ever thought about taking your life? Sometimes you got to just ask the question. At this day and age that we're living in, because I'm doing a lot of community work, and it's been so much. I see that we have a guest on. I'm going to check who that is. But it's been so much going on in the area of suicide. I mean, it's been really difficult, you know, because every time I turn around, I keep hearing someone say, this 8-year-old child took their life. They took their lives. And to be honest with you, we have to get to the point where we just start to become comfortable talking about it. You know, we don't have to feel guilty. We talk about it, the more people will start to feel safe to know that they're not alone. You know, when I was alone, and the enemy knew I was alone, and he took out because he knew I was alone. And during that time, I remember I was self-medicating because of the pain that I was under. Not only the pain, the mental attacks, the spiritual attacks, everything that I was feeling, I just felt so alone. And the enemy started to create just drama around me. And so I became even more isolated. So we just want to make sure that we create a safe space for people to know that they're not alone and they can always have a listening ear, okay? All right, so I see that we have a few people that have joined us. I see one is Ms. Sandra, and then I see another number, and it ends, oh, no, that's Ms. Ron. Okay, Ms. Sandra, thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Dr. Nancy. I know that your wonderful sister, Ms. Sharon, let you know that we won. And originally when my co-host, Ms. Annie, and myself started the show, talking about foster care. And that's how we got into this conversation. We talked a little bit about RAD, which stands for Reactive Attachment Disorder, side effects from kids use. And so we talked a little bit about that. They have a hard time resisting you know, that and themes and all. And then I talked about mental health awareness day, okay, all over the world. And then I got a little bit into suicide. So just to catch you up a little bit, if you'd like to join us, if you have any thoughts or any comments, foster system, I shared that I went through the foster care system, and I'm also a certified peer support specialist for foster care youth. And, yeah, so hi, Ms. Sandra, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Thank you. Throwing you right in the water.
Yes.
I know you're like, what? But thank you for joining us. Thank you so much. Have you ever been to the foster care system?
Actually, we were foster parents for over, what, 10 or 15 years, and then we adopted two children out of the system. So, yeah, I'm very familiar with it. I'm sorry that I couldn't join the entire show, but I had a school meeting that I was attending.
Oh, that's okay. No, thank you for joining us. Hopefully we'll get you another day when we get you on the full schedule hour and a half show. But, no, anything that you can share with us will be, you know, we have a lot of people listening in. Even if they don't tune in right away, they do listen on to this show. And I just wanted to know if you can just share with us some of your experience with foster youth. How did you become? How did you even get started to become a foster parent? What prompted you to get into that area of ministry? Because that's a whole another ministry. You gotta have a special heart. Look,
you
gotta have
a
special
foster
heart
for sure.
You have to have a heart and a passion for foster youth. So how did you
Most
get
definitely.
In there? If you don't mind sharing, please.
With us, we had my kids grew up with these kids in this area where we live in, and two of the boys, they were with their aunt, and their dad was just whatever. Their mom was a drug addict, and they ended up running away from their aunt's house and came here. So the family dynamics, it was just crazy. So in order for us to do things the right way and to keep down confusion with the family, we ended up putting those kids in foster care. So that's how our journey actually started, was putting that particular family in foster care so we were able to keep them in our home. And it just grew from there.
Wow. And then how was it? Like, once you got into it, was it difficult getting the kids? Did you end up adopting them? Did you have a hard time with this in the system, or was it a smooth process for you? Because everybody's process is different. But
no, actually, I'm going through right now with the children's division and the State Department right now. I'm going through a few things with them now, but it wasn't so much the kids. Whenever we were fostering, it was more the adults than it was the kids. It's like we're living with these kids on a day-to-day basis, but the system feels like they can tell us about the kids more than we can tell them. So we battled a lot with that. I know that as a foster mom, I could have done things differently. I wish I could have been on here earlier with the trauma piece of it that you were talking about and stuff, because I know that as a foster mom, I probably could have done things differently. But when you don't know the kids, and then they're telling you that the kids are traditional when they come to your home, but then when they get to your home, it's something totally different. And then I tried to raise some of those kids the same way that I raised my kids, because you try not to separate and differentiate the difference. But when I was fostering some of those kids, now I know that I should have done things a little bit different than what I did with them. And some of the things I did may have caused a little bit more trauma to the kids than helping them. And it's nothing bad that I did. It's just, you know, the way we were raised. Then you try to raise those kids the same way, and you can't, because their mindset, their trauma is different. So I've realized a lot of things in that area with fostering.
Right. Well, if you can drop some nuggets, that'll be good. Some of the things that you probably could have done differently, and this is just because what if there's some parents who are currently foster parents, fostering some children, and they need to know because they're probably in the early stages, and you're
Like one of the things I think is some of those kids need a lot more love and care and nurturing than what we can
to help
ever
people.
See.
So what would you?
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. What did you ask?
I was saying like a lot of the kids need a lot more love and nurturing than what we can see sometimes. And I think with me, I had one that just like always wanted to be up underneath me. And then it was like a jealousy thing that if you did for one kid, then that particular kid would get upset and say that you were favoring one over them, you know, and things like that. So I feel like with me, I probably should have given that child exactly what they needed, the love and the care that they wanted and what they needed, and I kind of like pushed that child away a little bit because it was just a lot on me with having six or seven kids in the home, and then you just got one that's like directly up underneath you. And on top of that, I do daycare. So it was a lot, and it was, you know, so that was me. I could have changed something in that area. And pretty much like a lot of the discipline things that I did, like taking away phones and taking away electronics, when kids did certain things, you know, you act up in school, you can't get your grades together, then you can't play a sport. That's something that you would do with your children that's got a different mindset. But with kids like that, you with kids like that, some of those disciplines is not what they need, and what and some things that we should not give them.
That was good because people. I mean, this is a learning curve for everybody. Every child is different. Every child needs something different. I mean, were you a single parent with these foster children? Did you have a spouse that helped you with the foster children? Did you have some help from the family that helped you with the foster children? Were you doing all this with all these children by yourself, or did you have help?
No, actually, I am married, so and we had our biological kids inside the home as well during this time. So with maybe, I think I've probably had maybe like 30, 40 kids. And probably out of those kids, maybe two or three of those families was a great help with us in caring for those kids. Other than that, we took care of the kids on our own. And one thing about us is that people will say foster parents do this for the money. I can honestly and truly say that wasn't one of the things that we did. Is whatever our kids had, that's exactly what those kids had. When we went on vacation, those kids went on vacation. We never left anybody out. It was you were when you came into this house, you're my kid, and we treated all of the kids the same way.
Right. So, can I ask you a question? How was it for your bio kids, your biological children, sharing the space with the foster children? Did you have the same foster children there, or? Did you have different foster children, like switch them out after a while?
Yes, we had different foster kids.
Okay.
My kids did pretty well with the foster children. I haven't had any of my kids to express, you know, anything different, but I can say I do know that one of my kids kind of said that they wished that we would not have adopted. They didn't want us to adopt the two kids that we did adopt. And I think it was because they may have seen something that I didn't see in the beginning. And now that I'm now I am seeing exactly what they saw at that time. But my kids did really good with fostering kids.
Okay. What caused you to adopt the foster children? How long did you have them before you adopted them?
One, the youngest child, we had over a year, and then his sister came to us maybe about 6 months we had her into our home. At that time, we had the child, the youngest one in our home, and then the system moved those kids to an adoptive home because we were just fostering. Then they moved the kids to an adoptive home, and so many issues were happening whenever they were in that home. Till that family just put them back in the system. So when we found out they were back into the system, we fought to get them back. Well, we fought to get the youngest one back into our home, and we did, and they ended up putting the oldest one in a facility. So during this time, we were going and actually seeing the oldest one at the facility, and for me, I was fighting more for our son, but whenever I was visiting her in the facility, thinking she needed us more than what he did. So that's what kind of made me kind of lead to wanting to adopt her, you know, adopting both of them. And then they had another brother that didn't want to be adopted. So therefore, he was still struggling in the system, and he never did get adopted, so therefore now he's just like another child in the system, like in jail. So he got caught up.
Right. He got straight caught up in the system.
Mm-hmm.
So you still have these two in your family now?
They're still in my family, but at the time we have no idea where either one of them are.
Right. But you did adopt them. I mean, when they get older, honey, that's with all kids. Your kids, the foster children, sometimes will use it the best you can while you have that controlled, while they're young. And then how old are they now?
They are 16, soon to be 17. No. Yeah, soon to be 17. And then our daughter is 21.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, they've been through a lot of trauma. And that's what we were talking about earlier. And so, you know, you do the best you can when you can, and that's all you can do. Would you still do fostering at this point in your life? Would you do it again?
I would like to. but if I did it, I would probably do it a little bit different than what I have in the past. But right
you're
now,
an expert
our now. Focus is, yes, definitely. I think our focus right now for the time being is to focus on our son that's graduating this year. And because he's dealt with foster kids all of his life. So we just kind of want to give him that one-on-one focus for right now.
I think that's great. You have to have a big heart. Does anybody want to make any comments to what was just said by Ms. Sandra?
Sandra, this is Annie.
Hi.
Hey, Annie.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard someone else. I just wanted to say thank you for serving humanity, serving the community by taking these children in and helping them. I really appreciate that you've done that.
Thank you.
And when you were saying how maybe some things you would have done differently, I feel the same way about my two children who I gave birth to. Feel there are things I wish I would have done differently, too.
Right.
So I identify with that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Annie. Ms. Sharon, you were about to say something?
I was just going to say the same thing that Annie said. Chandra, you know, I've watched you be a great parent to both your kids and your foster kids, and I've seen you go through some things that have broken your heart with your foster kids, but you continue to love them. And like Anna said, I just want to thank you for just contributing and doing what you could as a foster parent.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Definitely not an easy road. Like I said, I'm still going through things right now that I'm battling with the system, not having any kids in my home but my biological child. So it's a tough road. like she was saying earlier, you just have to have the mindset of fostering. You're doing this because you love the kids and for no other reason.
Right. What made you even get started in fostering? What caused you to even go into fostering? Did somebody tell you about it, or you knew somebody that was doing fostering?
No, it was just because of those two kids. It was just because of those two kids that we had that I was telling you about earlier. That's the only thing that made us go into fostering. And then after that, once we put those kids in care, it just went from there.
Nice. So what's the most children that you've had in your house? How many children?
Oh, my
all
goodness.
Together.
So I had my four at one time, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm going to say about 8 or 9 at once.
How? This is my next question. How did you manage that? I was struggling with the four I had. I mean, how did you manage it? You doubled.
I honestly don't know, but we have.
The grace of God.
They all play sports. I'm not going to say all, but the majority of them played sports. We were to every game. If we had to split up or if we had to go to 5 minutes of a game and leave and go to 5 of another one, we've always done that and always been invested in their grade, school. That's where I just come from just now was a board meeting. I was just coming from that. But I don't know. I make it happen.
Right.
I will make it happen. A lady asked me tonight, I don't know how you juggle this, this, and this, and this. But I don't know. I just make it happen.
You definitely do. And, again, we just want to thank you for your dedication and for your service. I wanted to ask you, have you ever had issues where you had to diffuse situations, arguments in the house between the children?
No, not big arguments, no. Anything that we really went through was, it was more with the kids with me, because I'm more of a disciplinarian. My husband is the easy goer. Whatever you want, you pretty much get, you know, for the most part. So we had to learn how to balance that. And like some of the kids, let's put it this way. They want discipline, but they don't know how to accept the discipline that you give them. So therefore, like with me, I got like a lot of hotline calls on me, not my husband, on me. It's things like that you have to deal with is like when the kids are hotlining you, what do you do? Do you just say, leave my home, or do you deal with the consequences or whatever and move along? Well, what I found through fostering is a lot of time those kids were wanting you. They would do things just for you to say, leave. And
get
the
out.
Reason why is because everywhere that they go, this is the result that they get.
Right.
Is you're doing this, you're doing that, I want you out. And that was one of the things that we never did is that we never, ever put the kids out of our home no matter what they did and no matter what people would tell us to do. A lot of people thought maybe, you know, you shouldn't have those kids in your home. You should do this and you should do that. But when you're living in the situation, it's hard. It's very hard to do. You know, I had, like the kids we adopted, their biological family would, I mean, just do all kind of things to me. And to be honest, you know, with having other people on the line, I'm going to share this story with you guys. It's going to be a wow situation. But with the two we adopted, the daughter, she just went wherever. We still had our son here. But he would do different things towards me. And hotline me, and the latest thing he did was in 2019, he accused me of putting bruises up and down his arms. He went to school the next day. He pulled his shirt off. A student seen it. They asked him where they come from. My mom did it to me. You know, so from 2019 to 2021, I had to face, which is going to be weird to you guys,
having a child abuse and neglect case against me. The thing is that they never took any foster kids out of my home. We changed our license from fostering to kinship, so we were still able to keep the foster child that we had in our home. We had guardianship of two kids. They were still in my home. They never closed my daycare down. So it was kind of weird that the system had a case against me because of my son for 2 years, but none of those other things ever happened. So I fought the system for 2 years with this case. They asked me twice to settle with the state on the case, and I refused. I don't know if they were talking about money. I don't know if they were just talking about just say that I did it or if I didn't do it. I don't know what they wanted. They just said settle. And my answer both times was no. I'm not settling with anyone because I know what I've done. I know what I haven't done. So if you got the evidence, whatever, you know, let's just move along with this. So for 2 years, I dealt with the State Department, going to court, paying a lawyer. I mean, all over $10,000 I've paid a lawyer to fight with me on this case. And 2 days before trial, the state of Missouri dropped the case. So it took a lot of faith. Yes, they dropped the case. So it took a lot of faith with me because I am definitely a faith believer. It was a lot of praying and asking God to just basically show these people the truth. And then I think after them placing him in different homes and seeing his behaviors at these different homes and things, that really changed their mind to know this was not a parental thing. This was a child thing.
Right. Did he ever come back to the house after this?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, that's another thing. Before they even dropped the case, he was replaced back into the home. They sent him to like a facility to be get tested and questioned and all of these things. And to be honest with you, about a week after they did all of these things, I was the one who actually went and picked him up from the facility, but I was the abuser. But they allowed me to go and pick him up from the facility. So
how do you move on from that? How do you move forward with that and still have him in the house? How were you able to do that?
What do you mean move forward?
Well, you said that even though this happened, he came back to the house, still living with you.
Yes,
after he accused you.
I mean, love. I mean, once again, you got to have a passion for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I still have a lot of love for this kid. It's just like now, you know, my mindset is that it's in a different place. Is that I did a lot of searching for him, you know, back then and stuff. But now it's to the point that I just have to use prayer now, instead of trying to fight to get him back into the home, somewhere he doesn't want to be. To cause more issues now, it's more prayer than anything now.
Right.
So if you don't have a passion for it, you will never get through some of the things that I've gotten through. You will never.
No. A lot of people, look, some people call it quits with their own kids. So that's why I asked you the question that I asked, because it is very difficult, especially if somebody's trying to come against your reputation, your character, to allow someone to do that. You know, it's like, it must be very frustrating. But again, these kids have been through so much trauma. This is a protective mechanism to want it, you know, trying to get you to push them away because they're used to being pushed away and nobody loves me anyways and people kick me out anyways. So there's a rebellious spirit you're already dealing with. You're aware of that. But again, you know, when it comes to your livelihood, you know, you don't know what you're saying. Yes, I'm guilty of how that could come back and affect you. I'm so glad that you stood firm and you were like, I'm not just going to say, I'm guilty. Yeah, I did it, because you know you didn't do that.
No, and not at all. All the kids that come to my house, no.
You love. You truly, truly it has to be a ministry.
That's anybody's kids. It's not just mine, not the fosters. I'm just that way with anybody's kids. If I know someone is in need, I'm going to find a way to help. you know, a lot of times I've reached out to the community here to help different kids out. That's just the passion that I have for kids in general.
Wow. I wish I knew you back in the days. I'd have sent all four over there to visit, too.
She has that passion.
That's
for
what some
kids
of my nieces and nephews tell me now.
I'd have sent you some kids. You want some more kids? I'll send you the four kids back then.
Yep.
Oh, no, but you know, it's hard to find people who truly love what they do and especially have the patience, because I'm telling you, I had four, and I thought, and all my friends were like, how did you do it? Because all my friends had two and three mags. And they would ask me how I did it, and I would just say, girl, you just do it. You just do it. And then they have each other to keep each other busy, and then, you know, it doesn't, sometimes it's not as hard. But some days are hard.
It's very hard. But with me, it makes me feel good when you do have those kids that come back to you. I was just in a conversation with a family. We're still close to a family now that we fostered. And the oldest daughter, she calls us, mom and dad still, her daughter calls us G-ma and G-pa and, you know, and things aww like that. And so, I mean, it's good whenever when the kids can actually come back and tell you that they greatly appreciate everything that you've done for them, because those kids have been in some homes where they would take their money. When they came to us, it was just like they had no clothes. Right. It was to the point where, I mean, I'm out shopping at 9, 10 o'clock at night, so those kids had clothes, night clothes to put on. So they come to you with a lot of trauma. So not just mindset, just like I was saying, just like with no clothes or not being able to eat, having to have two or three meals a day and then nothing else, to the point where they're stealing food. So
wow,
it's a lot.
And like you said, it's so rewarding, not the money, but the thank you, the ones who appreciate what you have done, the ones that remember what you have done, and the
mm-hmm
ones that still can have that relationship with, and they know that you didn't have to do it, but you did it. Not only did you do it, you did it with love.
Right.
That must be very rewarding.
Very.
Wow.
Very. I still support them to this day with anything that they need, going to church, picking them up from work, letting them spend the night. I mean, whatever it is, if we can supply it or help them, then we do.
Right. Have you had other people outside of foster care? Have you ever had, like, a friend or a family member that was in need that you had to step in for a while for the children?
Great question, all the time. I still do. With the first family that we had, they had a sister who had a baby, and she was on drugs a lot. I mean, even when she had the baby, she was on drugs. So we had her baby from about 3 days old up until she was about two or three, and then her dad kind of got himself together, whatever, and he got her. But even to this day, matter of fact, just right before school started, actually, my son had a friend who he's a senior, and he was just over here visiting with my son a lot of the times. Then this one particular day he was over here, and I get a phone call from a school administrator asking me, did I know this kid? And I'm like, well, the child is at my home right now. So they went through and started telling me a story about the mom being abandoning the kid and just going off. The child's sleeping at a park at a subdivision here, you know, and things like that. And the kid ended up staying here for over a month. Even the mom was mad at me for whatever reason. I don't even know. To this day, she won't even speak to me to this day. But our kids are still good friends. I do her son's hair. Matter of fact, I just did his hair last week for homecoming. You know, stuff with those things. She still allowed us to be in his life, but she has nothing to do with us. So, yes, to answer your question, yes, we still help kids in the system, out of the system, you know, whatever it is. If there's a need and we know about it, we will do what we can to help.
Wow. Wow. And like I said, that really is, it takes a special type of ministry, a special type of heart to do what you do. Because some people be like, look, don't be bringing little friends over here and da 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 and send them back where they came from, okay?
Yeah, but it's hard. But we don't.
For you to open your home, you have to have a huge, huge heart. You know, that's amazing. I want to check, does anybody have any comments or any questions for Ms. Sandra? I mean, I'm just still in awe that there's people like her still around, you know? It's really hard to find people who truly care about our kids, about our community, and about making a change in the world, because that's what she's doing.
Yeah. And like Sharon said, she's been a witness to everything that I've been through. So it's not like I'm just sitting here talking. She can pretty much vouch for everything that I'm saying, because people will say different things and make themselves look good or whatever, but everything that I've said, she can pretty much vouch for what I've went through.
Hey, that was confirmation. The dog's even agreeing, like, yup, that's right. Even the dogs are barking. We're down to 3.5 minutes. Again, I just want to make sure, Ms. Annie, do you have any comments?
I don't really have any comments, no. Just thank you to everyone for what you shared.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much. Ms. Sharon?
I don't have any comments. So thank everybody for their contribution tonight. Chandra, thank you and Earl for being such awesome parents, not only to your own kids, but to foster kids.
Thank you.
Right. And Ms. Sharon, thank you for inviting Ms. Sandra on the show tonight. I really appreciate it. You know, we had a guest who was going to talk about foster care. She didn't make it tonight. And sometimes that happens. Emergencies come up, but everything happens for a reason, and we're just so honored that we were able to hear such a wonderful testimony from Ms. Sandra. And I can't really wait to actually get a little bit deeper into her story and a little bit more about her, but we'll save that. We will save that with time. Everything happens for a reason. We'll definitely save that with time. And again, I want to thank you for sharing. Thank you for coming on tonight. We're about to get off in like about 2 minutes, but I wanted to know if you had any last words, any tips for any foster parents today as they're going through their fostering journey to encourage them, empower them through the journey.
I just basically want to just say, just make sure your heart is in it. Make sure that everyone in the house is on the same page. Because if they're not, then it won't be the same. You won't be able to accomplish the goal that you're trying to accomplish if everyone's not on the same page. And reach out to your community. Have a sounding board that you can go out to, because a lot of things is confidential, but you have to have someone that you can actually reach out to and talk to in the times that you need them. So just make sure you just have a good headspace whenever you dive into it.
That was good. That was good. A lot of times we get into this, you know, where we're giving back and we're giving back and we're giving back, but we want to make sure we're in the right headspace to give so that we're not pouring from an empty cup. We want to make sure that we fill ourselves up and that we strengthen ourselves, that we're able to deal with these children, you know, and whether it's our children or our community children, they all need us. They're all special. And they need us to be the right headspace, especially for those who have been through trauma and a lot of hurt in their life.
Yeah.
They need us strong and to be able to help them. But, again, it's always good, like Ms. Sandra said, it's good to have a good support system. Make sure that you don't take more than you can handle and don't not have a support system so that you don't end up feeling alone.
Right.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Ms. Sandra. Thank you, Mr. Ron. And thank you to my beautiful co-host, so much for tonight. All right, Miss Annie, we're just going to wish everybody a good night. Thank you for listening. Remember, if you see something, say something. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.